You're listening to The Critical Thought, where we challenge our listeners to use critical thinking when examining the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Hi, this is JT.
And this is Lady C.
Welcome to another episode of The Critical Thought. Today's episode will deal with a subject that is perhaps the most important aspect of the Jehovah's Witnesses. In fact, it's so important that they rarely even discuss it when they're dealing with a Bible study. This is known as disfellowshipping, disassociation, and shunning. This is the judicial process that Jehovah's Witnesses use to punish people who fail to follow the rules. And it doesn't matter what the rules are. You fail to follow them, and you will be punished for that. And for many people, like myself, my wife, and so many other people, all we did was ask too many questions. And as a result, we were impacted by this disfellowshipping, disassociation, and now shunning of people who we've known for decades, family members, husbands, wives, children, grandparents, are all impacted. Well, today we have with us an individual who, like so many of us, is able to share a story that shows just how this religion and its teachings, especially on disassociation and disfellowshipping, impacts people's lives. We'd like to welcome Jay. Jay, could you share just a little bit about your, as we would say, your Jehovah's Witness biography?
Good afternoon, JT, Lady C. Pleasure to be on your show.
Absolutely.
My mom, I was partially born into the truth. My mother, the truth. I was born into Jehovah's Witnesses. You can see after 20 years of after being disassociated myself, you still have those remnants of using terms like the truth. But my mom became a Jehovah's Witness in 1967. And around that time, I was 4 or 5 years of age. I remember going to the Yankee Stadium just for conventions. I heard the president then, Nathan H. Knorr, speak. After that, I remember going to assemblies and hearing Frederick Franz, who became a president, speak. We lived in the New Jersey area. So that Yankee Stadium and then Jersey City, the Roosevelt Stadium, which doesn't exist anymore, were convention sites in the summer. I'm a child of the 1975 push. I got baptized in 1974. I remember going out in field service. It was a big push. We were out in the, remember Volkswagen, one of the brothers in the hall had a Volkswagen bus, and we would all cram into that bus and go out and preach. And they were talking about us being like locusts descending upon the nations with this message about the end coming. Well, 1975 came and it left. That didn't bother me so much as at the young age I was in. I really believed that it was the truth. My mom believed it was the truth. I believed it was the truth. And life as a witness, you know, no birthdays, no holidays, didn't bother me so much. Because we had a lot of association at the hall. But there were other areas that I would say, when I look back, I was negatively impacted by being a witness. In 1980s, well, how I was impacted, it was being told not to go to college. That was big, especially for an African-American person of color. We really need a head start, and being told, you know, that college is a no-no was really, really a big impact on my life. Fortunately, I was able to catch up and go in the late adult years. But I went into Pioneer, full-time Pioneer service in 1983. Pioneered the full-time service for 10 years, approximately 10 years. I went into caretaker service at one of the biggest assembly halls in the world at that time. I don't know if it still is, but Stanley Theater was one of the first caretakers that lived there. It was a form of Bethel service. It was a step toward Bethel. And it was great. The association, the worldwide association connections, and the traveling that, that we got to do being affiliated with the organization and in that capacity was exciting for me at that age. I got married in 1986 to another person who had a similar background, being raised as a Jehovah's Witness. We got married in 86. Prior to getting married, I missed the part about after being at the assembly hall, assigned to the assembly hall, I applied for Bethel to go into Bethel full time. I was accepted. In that letter, there's a part that says if you are considering dating or considering marriage, to let the society know. Well, I did, and I knew that that meant that I would not be going to Bethel. Greatest choice I ever made, partially. Greatest choice. I'm glad I didn't go. Because not going, after I got married, my first former wife and I, who's still a Jehovah's Witness, had four children, beautiful children. They're now in their, the oldest is 24, the middle is 23, and they're twins that are about 20 years of age. So you take the period of being married and then having to go from that pioneer style life of swearing, JT, what is that phrase we use? Oath of, it's an oath that you take, sort of, that you won't have much. What do we call that? Oath of poverty, right?
I like the way you said it. You value you're not going to have much. That's true.
Right. And unfortunately, no college education, person of color. It was tough, but I was able to get into college. I learned one thing from the society: real estate, purchasing and acquire real estate. They teach us that. They don't teach us to do it, but if you watch the model,
yeah,
the model. I'm not a tycoon or anything like that, but I was able to make up some of the loss.
Yeah.
By acquiring some properties at the time,
yeah.
And it helped a lot. The problem came for me, of course. I had a mother passed away. She was, as I mentioned, Jehovah's Witness. She died due to complications of not accepting an organ donation. That's for another time. But we had a series of deaths in the family, and along with again struggling financially. And what I noticed, I became an elder, that was weighing down to make these meetings, to fulfill the responsibilities. I was pioneering still at some point before when one of the children were born. But it was a lot of pressure, yet it seemed like it was like a hamster on a wheel.
Yeah.
Where even when people knew that you had all this weight on you, it still never enough.
Never enough.
Never.
It's never enough. Never enough.
And I remember just the pressures. I remember giving a public talk, and I had gotten so much pressure just from everything that I had to just stop the public talk. And I walked
on
the platform.
Oh, wow.
And of course, you know how people would view that.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. I had one sister. She told me, she said to me, she said, you know, I saw you up there and I could see horns on your head.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I believe it.
Those pressures were there. And I went back to college, and I decided I just didn't want to be in poverty. And, I can remember, an article coming out about blood components, and the article, I think around the 2000 or probably the late either 19, either I think it was around 2000, article about blood components, five blood components, and the society was lifting at that point its prohibition on the use of any of those five blood components.
Oh yeah.
Blood, red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, plasma. And what they basically were saying was that you can have a part of blood, just a little blood, it's up to you, but you can't have the whole blood. And it just hit me about you know, I went back to my mother's situation on the organ issue, and the other people that have just passed away, and it bothered me. And I remember raising that up in conversations. I remember my former wife asked me, what's wrong? And I would mention it, and I try to logically approach it. But most, as you know, most of the witnesses, they wouldn't look at it objectively like that. They would look at it like someone told me that smacks of apostasy. You know, and then the other thing that happens, my sister, I have a sister, she's in her early 40s. She was disfellowshipped, and close to her. And just seeing the way people were treating her bothered me a lot. So my big issues at that point, two of the biggest issues were the control that the governing body had on people's lives, literally. Yes. on their physical, their medical decisions about medical aspects of their life, and then the control that they had on families. They could it was like a light switch, and that they could take that away from you with a switch of a light
at any time.
At any time. And that was 20 years ago. It's worse now.
Yes, it is. As we used to have a district overseer, he used to say, as we get deeper in the last days, the organization is going to tighten down. And man, that's what they have done. When you mentioned the blood, I'm at the point now where I don't even try to keep up anymore, because the list can just change at any time. Stuff will move across from one list to the other, you know. And so you have this, like you said, you have this list of God says it's okay and God says not to. And then at any time they want to move the list around, they can do that. And like you said, when you logically start looking at it, you realize that something is wrong. I mean, a stolen car is a stolen car. And because you take it and chop it up in a hot shop, you know, it doesn't change the fact that all the parts are stolen off the same car. I mean, so, you know, you see how the teaching doesn't hold logic many times. And that's the problem. Like you said, when you bring it up, the best way a Jehovah's Witness can deal with it is simply say, that smells like apostasy, you talking there, brother. And so at that point, it shuts the conversation down. It shuts it down.
Yeah. Well, that digress, it went bad from there on. I'm not going to go into too much about my former wife. Not going to say anything bad, but she was given by their term scriptural basis to leave.
Oh yeah.
By my stand, sort of seemingly apostate stand.
Yeah.
So
you're talking about that absolute spiritual endangerment routine. Yeah, right. Absolutely. It's amazing. They will tell the wife or the husband, you know, if you need to leave, brother or sister, the congregation will support you because you have absolute spiritual endangerment married to that apostate man or woman. And so the witness couple, their marriage will fall apart because she thinks I'm doing something that God has okayed. We have talked, my wife and I, man, I'm going to tell you, we have talked to so many couples who, because one person became awoke to what's going on and the other person didn't, they ended up the same way. And we tell people it's important to make sure people like yourself and others who find themselves in this situation, you got to talk to somebody. You need to talk to somebody. The reason why is because the spouse on the other side, they got full backup, full reinforcement. Every time they walk into the kingdom hall, you hang in there, sister. You remain faithful. Brother, you just keep the faith, brother. Whereas those of us who've left, who don't have our partner, we literally many times would find ourselves with no one to encourage us. And so this is what the internet provides, a place where you can bounce things off people and take advantage of it. Man, I tell people all the time, you know, take advantage of it, because it is very difficult while the other person is getting all kinds of support to hang in there and keep their marriage separated. I mean, it's crazy. Crazy thing in the world.
And the average non-witness, when they see something like that happen, they're thinking, what the heck did you do?
Yeah.
We had an insurance agent that we used to go to, my former wife and I, and he says to me, Jeff, what the F did you F somebody?
I know.
No. I said, It can't be over religion. It can't be. I don't understand. It could be, you know?
Yeah, it boggles the mind, man, when you talk to non-witnesses. They're like, your wife left you because you don't go to church, man. Never been to church with my wife. And so their reference point their reference point is so far from how witnesses make things appear that people, they cannot relate to it. That if your spouse stopped going to church, the church says she can leave you now, especially if you say something about the pastor, you know, as it were. And so it's like, who came up with that? And so this is how this organization works. And that was kind of what we wanted to tap into in our discussion with you, is how has this affected you, or how have you seen the impact, and what have you done to deal with this? Because as you mentioned, you have four, you know, wonderful kids, but where are the kids in relationship to the organization and in terms of y'all guys' relationship?
Let me say this one more thing. I want you to hear this. I will never forget the morning that former wife went to Kingdom Hall, and I stayed home that day in the back doing some gardening, and they never came home. And I looked at the sun come down, and I called, couldn't get any answer. Long story short, I was told, I made contact. She said, we're safe, they're safe. And that was the point that she left with them. And I'll never forget getting on a bicycle, because she had the car, riding around the city looking for them, calling on the phone. I don't know if you've ever seen anyone take a dog that they had as a pet they didn't want anymore and let that dog out of a car. And that dog goes running to try to find his master. And that is what I felt that day. I remember getting on the phone and reaching her on the phone and listening to sounds, thinking maybe if I heard a fire truck, I would know where they were. It was horrible. It was horrible.
Yeah.
So it was tough. And so now, you know, of course, the time has gone by. I've remarried, and I have a daughter from this marriage that I'm currently in. Mm-hmm. My children from the former marriage, after I moved from the Jersey area down to Georgia, I went into law enforcement, and on a regular basis, I went up and, you know, would see them. They came down here for summers. After one of the conventions, I think it was 2016, there were dramas about communicating with witness relatives, and there was a change after that.
Yeah,
it was a major change. Mm-hmm. My kids pretty much, I think, have adopted, at least at this point, maybe not after this presentation, but to this point, they've adopted the 80s sort of approach, which is limited contact. Unless, if you know, if they get sick, maybe I'll be lucky, but limited contact. Just, you get these calls, you know, to see if there's still a pulse, maybe if you're still alive, are you okay? But that's it. And that's tough. The Four Corners documentary that I watched, there's a part at the end where that brother, he talks about his three children, and he says that it's almost like they're not alive, and that he's mourning, and that he has to cope with it. He almost has to treat it like there's someone who passed away, or he's passed away, and maybe they'll wake up at some point. It's my worst nightmare.
It is.
I thought 20 years ago that the witnesses would reform their stand on this fellowshipping.
Yeah, I know what you mean. What you shared, man, is I'm gonna tell you, man. You know, see, this is the part that people don't know anything about. I've had this conversation multiple times, man. I'm gonna be honest with you. I've had this same conversation where brother come home from work, man. One of my boys, man. He went to work, came home, walked in the house, clothes gone, everything that she owned gone. He got on the phone, called his mom and daddy, called his in-laws, and they said basically the same thing you just said. We know where she's at. In fact, we helped her move, and we ain't telling you where she's at. And so, man, it just crushed my boy, man. I mean, he was an elder, you know, him, his wife, high-flying couple, you know, in the circuit, like. And man, it just crushed my boy. And so when I hear stories like this is the part that people don't know about when it comes to how this religion works. This is why, and as you know, as an elder man, when people have Bible studies, there ain't nothing in any publication that a person studies with a Jehovah's Witness that goes through to give them a good understanding of the judicial process. The average Jehovah's Witness don't know nothing about the judicial process. And so how can you deal with a system and you don't even know what the rules of the game are? You cannot win if you don't know what the rules are. And so when a person walks into that back room, three guys sitting across the table, legal pad, ready to roll, and you can't write down one note. You can't write down one note. And as one elder firing questions, the other elder is formatting his question based on how you answer the other elder's question. And as it keeps going back and forth, after a while, people get confused. And after what, brother said, see, you're not telling the truth. See, Brother Davis just asked you a question. You gave him a different answer. You just gave, and the person is just confused. I mean, I've seen people back in the back room, man. They're so nervous that they literally. You ever seen a situation where your legs start bouncing because you know it, chief, and you think about this is a brother or a sister that they are scared because they know. In about 60 minutes, their entire life will change. And so the point you made about, you know, you wonder would the organization lighten up. Well, I'm gonna tell you, man, we did a little thing a while back, and we referenced something that the Watchtower had said about the whole process of disfellowshipping, or as some churches refer to it as excommunication. It was an article that the Watchtower had written. It was back in the 40s. And what they did, they was taking a look at excommunication or disfellowshipping and how they commented on it. And the comments that they gave on this process of disassociation or disfellowshipping or excommunication, they just dogged it because it was so unloving, so unkind. You know, it reflected nothing about being Christ-like. That's what they said. And then within just a few years, these guys sat around a table at Bethel and they discuss, this is a very useful tool. We can use this tool. And so the article just pointed out how basically when this was being used by another denomination, it was cold and cruel. Now, of course, the Watchtower says it's a loving arrangement. And so it really drives home the point that, you know, the organization, man, I tell people, man, it's like a cold hand of steel and a velvet glove. And when they slap you upside the head with this stuff, man, it's painful. And that's what we've seen. We left many years ago, but we see how these guys have dealt with people, man. It is just off the chain. And so, It's important that the people understand that this organization takes no prisoners. It takes no prisoners, man. People will have to suffer. And when you think about it, I remember reading this article once in the paper that was done on one of the techniques that the organization uses, the shunning technique. And it dealt with prisoners who were put into isolation. And it was based on, as you know, if you're from the New York City area, you know about Rikers Island. I mean, it's one of the most notorious prisons probably in the United States, probably. But they had done research on Rikers Island. And what they found out is that the suicide rate, the rate of depression, it literally skyrocketed when they started putting people into what people often refer to as the hole or isolation. And the organization knows that. It is a very useful tool because it will break people. I mean, personally, my father retired from the prison system back home where I'm from. And he used to tell us, you know, stories all the time, man. You know, you have some big dude come in, 6'2", 225, 235, strapping, you know, muscles and everything. And man, they put him in the hole. Take him out in 6-7 weeks, man. you come back like a little wimp, man, because you get in the hole, nobody around you, nobody to talk to, total isolation, and it breaks you down psychologically. It breaks you down to the point that you will even want to take your life. And so we have seen that this happens to people all the time in this religion. The organization has created literally a box. You cannot have any friends outside the organization. As one of Jehovah's Witnesses, you cannot, even as kids, man, you cannot go up to another Jehovah's Witness and say, "This is Bob. He's my best friend." No, you can't do that. And so witnesses have no relationship with people outside the organization. Your only people of friendship are inside the organization. And if you lose those, you're alone. And that, you know, I personally, man, I look back to people who left in 76 and I feel for those guys because they had nobody to talk to. They had nobody to talk to. Today, we at least have the internet. And you can see people all around the world who's going through something very similar. And it lets you know, hey, I might be able to make it. And so that's one of the things that it's amazing how the organization used this thing literally as a weapon. And they wield this thing effectively because they're able to beat people down. And basically what they want you to do is they want you to come crawling back on your knees on broken glass. And that's unfortunately what we see people often end up doing, trying to get back to their family and so forth. They hold our families hostages. They really do.
But, you know, not only that, JT and Jay, one of the things I like to bring out about this shunning is, like, we know we walked away and we knew that we were going to be shunned because we've kind of prepared ourselves for it.
Yes.
I think Jay, you as well, correct? You disassociated, right?
Yes.
So by the fact that you disassociated, we just kind of just said walked away. We were like, we're not going to even bother with your program of writing a letter.
No.
So the issue is you have people who, like us in our situation, we could prepare for the day we were going to be shunned because we understood that walking away from it meant nobody's going to talk to you. And even still, for me and also JT, it took some of our family a long time before they found out we had walked away because we were not read off on the platform. And I think the only big thing is that when JT left and he turned in his flock book, we were talking about this the other day about how they actually read him off and just said, "JT, Brother JT has been deleted." So, of course, when they did that, people no doubt said, "Oh, he must have did something wrong," right? But then you got the people that's being shunned that's not prepared for that. And those are the people that they're going to that meeting and they're thinking that the brothers are going to show them some mercy. And maybe you don't know what kind of conversation they had before they got to that meeting. Somebody probably said, "Don't worry about it. You know, just get in there and tell them the truth and all this." And so they got a little bit of hope. But, you know, from the time they walk through that front door to the time that they leave, they have no idea that they're getting ready to be shunned. So there's two types of shunning, the one that you can prepare for, plan for, and the one that you just are just out there. And that's the one where people end up committing suicide because they just can't handle that. It's like sudden death, you know? So I just kind of want to bring that point out, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And like you were saying, Jay, you had referenced the Four Corners program that was on television about the family, the brother, as he was telling his story, what it was like. And it's very true. People, when they leave, and we've talked to so many people, oh my goodness, we've just talked to so many people over the years. It's a gut punch. I mean, it is literally a gut punch. And so when it hits them, they many times don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. And unfortunately, too many times we've seen people, they literally go off on the deep end. And the thing of it is you don't have to. You don't have to go off on the deep end. You do not have to go off on the deep end. As we say, do not become a JW poster child, because that's what they expect. They expect to see you broke down, looking bad. Your life is going, as they say, going to hell in a handbag. That's what they look for. And when they see you and you're not living or doing what they expected you to do, they are absolutely confused. Because when witnesses see us here in the DC, they're like, y'all look like y'all happy. Y'all look like y'all happy. And we are. We're good. How about you? You look like you tired, man. And so this is what, it doesn't fit their narrative. And so we can live our lives in a way where it benefits us. Trying to get back at these people at the detriment of ourselves, it's not worth it. It's simply not worth it. It really isn't.
Most definitely. I just want to say one other thing about this summer, during their convention that they had, there was a talk, and it was mentioned of fatherless children. And, I thought about it. It the audacity, the nerve to suggest that a legitimate parent, just because they are a non-believer, is no longer a legitimate parent, that the children, their children are fatherless simply because their father does not, or mother, is no longer a Jehovah's Witness. How dare them? The audacity of these people to take that stand, to be so arrogant. And in answer to your question earlier, JT, you asked about coping with having been dealing with the fallout from excommunication or shunning. It's highly recommended that anybody, whether you excommunicate, whether you disassociate yourself or disfellowship, get counseling. Counseling.
Yeah. We had a buddy of mine. He went to get some counseling, and he said it was so funny because the lady asked him, what was his life like as a witness? And during this time, we had the two double meetings during the week, basically Tuesday and Thursday in most areas. And he described his basic life of what he did. She asked him, so tell me, give me a general week of activities. And he just ran it off. Monday night, I studied for the meeting on Tuesday. Tuesday at the meeting. Wednesday night, I studied for the meeting on Thursday. And Thursday night, I'm at the meeting, and on Friday, I'm preparing for field service on Saturday. And Saturday, I'm reading my watchtower for Sunday. Then Sunday, I'm back. And she said, well, how often did you do this? He said, I've been doing this all my life. And so she was like, well, this is your problem. And this is really one of the reasons why the organization has always discouraged witnesses from seeking psychological help. I mean, for decades, they did not want you going to see no psychologist, no professional, because after they start probing into your life, it becomes very readily understandable. You need to take a look at this way you're doing this worship thing, because it has literally consumed your entire life. And like you said before, you think about brothers in this organization, because of no education or lack of education, they oftentimes have to take lower paying jobs, which means they have to work longer hours to make sufficient money. And so it's literally a hamster wheel that a lot of witnesses fall in. I mean, imagine if you could, for example, I know the experience of these two girls. They was both witnesses. They both were licensed CPAs. They actually, because of what a CPA makes in a year, they actually took the job and split it. And they were regular pioneers. And so they was able to comfortably pioneer because they had a job that paid them a substantial salary where they didn't have to struggle. Whereas your typical pioneer working nice, cleaning and this and that, they're not making enough money to, scrape two nickels together. And this whole thing just cycles the person down. And then, of course, when you have to come off the list, oh, it's too bad, brother. You have to come off the list. Your health is bad. You have no financial resources. And then you're not on the list. And then you're not being celebrated in the congregation. I mean, and so it's just a dog environment. And for people who are trying to do what's right, trying to find out information, they should never be told you're asking too many questions or that sounds like it got some apostate smell to it. It shouldn't be the case. We would never do a Bible study like that. We would tell the Bible study and commend the Bible study. Ask as many questions as you want. And we know once in the organization, man, the questions, especially certain types of questions, you have to approach people carefully because they will accuse you of being an apostate.
And Jeff, you had said something about the your Bethel letter. What was that all about?
Well, the letter, I got accepted, I think it was 1986. And the letter says, welcome, you know, congratulations. However, if at this time you're considering marriage, was it? Hold on a second.
There it goes.
There you go. Yeah, we
I got it up on the screen for you
yeah,
now.
We got it for you. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That you are, it says, it is understood that you are not engaged or planning to marry at this time. If there has been any change in the facts presented on your application, such as your health, relation to your congregation, moral situation, or whatever, please advise us in writing before reporting.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If you're going to, yeah.
Once you right get, here. On
this
screen.
True, yeah.
So whatever became of that letter? Yeah.
I still have the letter, and I got married, and I have four children, and I'm no longer married to that person. I'm married to a new wife here.
Yeah.
A daughter from that marriage.
Yeah, that's good.
I told my children that had I gone to Bethel, they wouldn't be here.
That is true. That is probably true.
Anything good came out of all of this.
I know, right?
Born. And one day they'll realize that, hopefully.
Yeah, we hope so, man. We really do.
Wait. Hold on, though, Jeff. Hold on. So you get this letter talking about come on to Bethel, and you say, no, this is not for me. Then you get married, have some kids, bring them into the world, and of course you bring them up in this religion, and now these kids are shunning you.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
It's amazing.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. The impact this religion on families is just unreal.
It is.
Still support these children. I provide their health care, and I still support them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
I remember being referred to as a fatherless boy. Me and my brothers and sisters, and my dad was right there. I mean, my dad did everything for us. We talking about, you know, he bought us, you know, we built mini bikes, go karts, and I'm like, well, my dad is home. You know, I'm not fatherless.
Right.
But that's what they called you, fatherless boy.
And when you do that, when you take away legitimacy of parent, rightful parents, you make you create an environment ripe for child abuse.
That's yeah. right.
You practically prepared an environment that's ripe for that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Going out in the service for people who are possibly child molesters.
Yeah,
that's right.
That is so true. That is so true.
And I think it's really bad because, like, my mother was a stay-at-home mom. And so, you know, like you guys are saying, you're looked at as being fatherless boys and so forth. And of course, me and my sister were too. But it's like, who paid for the gas for my mom to get to the Kingdom Hall, to get out in service, to knock on doors, to give them this free labor that they were getting? And then for them to make us look at my father, I never really looked at my dad in a bad light. I knew he worked for the Mark of the Beast because I grew up on a Mark of the Beast base, military base. So imagine me sitting up here at the school and being a Jehovah's Witness, and then my dad is being told, or I'm being told that my dad has got the mark of the beast in his forehead, and we're sitting here trying to, you know, I'm trying to balance this.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very, you know, so, and it's really interesting how children can handle that. Because when I look back as an adult, and when I look back as, you know, as an adult looking back, I don't think my adult self could handle that as well as my child self could. Because it's like, I don't know what we do. It's like learning two languages, I guess. I mean, I had a girlfriend who was married to a guy who only spoke Spanish. So he was from El Salvador. And so she taught her daughter Spanish as the first language and then English. And then she's now really good at both languages. So I guess, you know, being raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, it's almost like you're learning two languages because you're learning the language of Jehovah's Witness. But then if your father or your mother is not a witness, then now you're learning that language and you're actually coping. And it was like it was a heavy burden for me to carry because I'm being ostracized by teachers. And I can't say this enough. Being raised in this type of environment, being raised in like the rural, because like sometimes these military bases, they were located like out in the middle of nowhere. So you're going to like this little farm school. You got this little teacher. She's not used to dealing with people like us because you don't really see Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff like that. So then you come to her class or his class and they're treating this little third grader like crap. Like, you understand why your mom just bought a school brochure to your teacher to say, Kathy will not be celebrating these holidays and she won't be doing birthdays and all that. And you're just thinking, well, I know that they said that John the Baptist got his head cut off, but you don't even know John the Baptist like that because you don't even know all the books of the Bible yourself. So now here you are in this situation being treated like I don't know what and not understanding why, you know? And so that's why I say people who's watching this broadcast, don't treat those kids like that because they don't know. These children do not understand that religion. They just know that for me as a kid, I knew. I was afraid. Yeah. I was just, all I knew was the Jehovah's Witness religion was like my rabbit's foot. If I wasn't there, it was like my good luck charm. You know, I had to be there or I was going to die. You know, that's how I look at that, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
They asked me when I was in school, I remember the teacher, they said, well, you're Jehovah's Witness. You can't play in the Christmas play. How about if you just play Scrooge?
Oh, my God.
I remember so many things, man. You always had those kids whose parents always brought like cookies and stuff to the class and stuff. I remember one kid, mama, she brought some cupcakes. And of course, you know, you can't, it was birthday. And so the teacher said, she said, JT, I'll scrape the icing off. Just eat the cake. Just eat.
See, when I was growing up, and you know, after we got older, and my sister never became one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and she told my grandmother, who my father's mother was almost gonna be a nun, because she was in a convent, but she never, you know, took the whole celebration. She never went all the way through. So if she would have become a nun, sort of like you, Jeff, I wouldn't have been here. My dad wouldn't have been here, all that, right? So she had told my grandmother when my sister was 10 years old, and she told my grandmother, she said, I do not want to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses. So at the age of 10, she knew she was not going to do that. Yeah. So then she had her friends at the Kingdom Hall, and she had friends on the military base, you know, where we grew up at, on the different bases. And I remember telling my mom, she's celebrating Christmas because she was buying somebody some candles for Christmas. And this is when we got to be teenagers at that point. She was celebrating the holidays and everything else, you know. So then when we got older and my sister was like, I kept trying to figure out why all the little kids were so mean to you. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, because I was eating the chocolate cake in the school, in the classroom. She said, weren't you eating the chocolate cake? But see, I was one of those little kids that when the mother said not to do it, I didn't do it. I was one of those little kids. I was a scary kid, right? But my sister was like, she knew she didn't want to be a witness. So she was eating the chocolate cake. She had good friends. And, you know, she had a good life, according to her, you know. But that's what happens when, you know, we're in the same family, but we got two different personalities, you know.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Well, you know, Jay, I tell you, sharing those thoughts with us, you know, we have also other people that we've talked to who also have experiences.
She's not going to be able to make it today.
Okay.
We're just kind of hanging out, talking about shunning experiences and stuff. But the thing is, here's the thing. I like to say that when you, since we left this religion, and we knew we planned our shunning. Nobody plans to die, figuratively speaking. Nobody plans to die like that. But we now have a growing group of people online. And we always welcome people to make sure that you tap into these online sources. Yes. And get to know people. But I will say this. Don't just hinge on just because a person is an ex-witness that they're going to be the person you want to be hanging out with. You know, you still got to be careful making your friends. You know, you got to be careful with all that and everything. So I would just be saying, look online, you know, find people to hang out with and everything like that, because you will find people that are like-minded, because the issue is being like-minded. When we were Jehovah's Witnesses, we were put into a group of people that we had to be around. And I can attest to that, because I didn't like it. Most of the people that were in my congregation had nothing in common with me. And so those people, I'll tell you, if shunning stopped, there are some people in the congregation that we just probably wouldn't be friends anyway, because we just weren't like-minded. We didn't have anything in common. So sometimes shunning can be a blessing, but then sometimes, of course, it's a curse when it's your family. So I would just be willing to say, you know, try to connect with people online, and don't let it get you down too bad. I understand people when they have family members, that's the hardest. And because I don't have that experience, because I had both of my parents, but I did have an aunt, a couple of aunts that shunned me. Not only that, but I also had people I grew up with that I can never talk to again. People that were in my wedding, people that I built relationships with, because not everybody was bad. There's a lot of people that I do like that I wish I could talk to. So I'm just saying that the shunning is pretty bad. It's almost like everybody went on the Titanic, and all your family died on the ship, and you were the only person that got the raft and was able to get back to shore. That's what it's like. That's what shunning is like, because you lost your whole community, you know, where I had different people that I went to school with. They're captains of industry now. If I was on that ship, then I would still be sailing right now. But because the ship that I was on capsized and everybody died per se, because, you know, you can look at it both ways. It could be like you were the only survivor, or they were the only survivors, because there's two different islands here. Because you can look at them and say they're shunning me, or I can look at them and say I'm shunning them. Because, you know, we walked away from them, you know. And so then we got to, like JT's mom always said, you got to get yourself a new clientele of friends. So that's what we try to do. Try to tell people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I look back at myself, you know, because of what I was involved in the organization. You know, I spent most of my time with other elders. And so when you leave the organization, these guys don't want to lose their position. I know guys who, like, you know, I mean, there's some guys, I'll be very honest with you. They're simply there for the glory. They love. I mean, I know people who are trying to get into the traveling work. They don't care about the friend. They want the new car for 3 years. Okay. And so these guys are very corporate, basically. And so they don't want to leave the organization because they enjoy the perks. And that's where you really got to come down to ask yourself, you know, what kind of person am I? And so for me, man, it was a matter of, I can't do this. I reached a point, man, I could not give public talks anymore. Like you, I could not give public talks anymore. I could not stand in front of a congregation of folks and sit there and blow smoke in their eye. Yeah. And once they changed some of the teaching, especially like with the 1914 generation, I knew I had to leave, man. I knew I could not stay. And then it just kept getting worse with other teachings that they changed. And so after a while, you realize, you know what? I can't do this. And so we end up leaving. And I fully understood. They have to do this because this is how they was trained. You know, witnesses prepare for decades. I mean, decades, for the day that somebody's going to step to them and say something, as you said, that sounds like it got some apostasy to it. I mean, they're prepared, and they will shut down immediately. And so it kind of catches many of us off guard, because we're like, I didn't know they're going to respond like that. I mean, we've had people who simply just make a simple statement, boy, and next week they getting phone calls. I heard you question the society.
No, I'm just asking the question about you.
Doesn't matter. They own it. And it's funny. People can be missing from the Kingdom Hall for years, man. Elders don't call. Only time they call, Sister Davis, you got your time this month. Thank you. But the minute they hear that you did something wrong, man, they are Johnny on the spot. I mean, they be on it like white on rice, man. I mean, and it's very unfortunate that this is the only time they show up. And we've seen it. We talked to people. I saw it with my own eyes. That was the only time some brothers called when you got in trouble. As long as you was just floating out there by yourself and undiscouraged, they didn't take no time to help you out. But the minute they heard a report that you were doing something wrong, they had to protect the brand. Got to protect the name. And right. So this is what this organization really is all about. Is, you know, I tell people we work for a book publishing company. And the same as you work on your job, many times if you leave your job, you will probably not have something to do with all those who you work with in the past. And that's really the way it is in this organization. We left a job, man. We work for Watchtower.
Right.
Our regular jobs, that was really our part-time job, because your dedication was to this organization and the work that they wanted you to do. And so now that we realize that we have to go in a different direction, we realize also that it will impact us. And that's what this shunning, and that's why we wanted to just touch base and just discuss a few things about how this shunning, it just destroys people.
Yeah.
And the sad part is, Jay, it's all by design. It's all by design.
Jay, you said your kids are in their 20s, right?
Yeah, the oldest is 24. The
oh, wow.
The middle is 22, and okay. Then twins that are 20.
Mm. Wow. So the question is, is anybody pursuing college?
All of them are in college.
Good.
Oh, yeah. How did that happen? How'd that work? How'd you work that out?
Their mother, that's one thing that she we were in sync about.
Yeah, yeah. That's good, man. That is good.
That's good, because the thing is, maybe while they're in college, maybe they'll get a little critical thinking going on and realize that shunning is wrong.
Well, I've had some conversations. I got one I talked to, and he told me, well, I asked him about classes he was picking. He was talking about psychology and something. It was like, no, I don't want to go to that class. And, you know, now, of course, you know that the best thing is just sit back, because if you do anything and push them, then they're definitely not going to do it.
Oh, no.
Oh, right.
Even though they're in college, they still have been programmed to try to navigate through things that are going to cause them to become critical thinkers.
That is true.
They're programmed to avoid critical thinking.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
That's so maybe if you tell him, you better not take psychology. Maybe you'll be like, maybe I better get in psychology. You
better get into it, right? They kind of went reverse psychology.
Reverse psychology.
Yeah. Well, and the sad thing is that a lot of witnesses will delve into these things. They won't tell us that.
Yeah.
But the cognizant dissonance is what prevents them from processing it to a point where they actually start rationally thinking that, man, this chair has it can't stand on one leg.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And that is so true. Well, Jay, we want to thank you, Jay, for taking the time this afternoon to touch base with us, share some of your personal experience. And hopefully, you know, other people can see that, you know, as we always try to emphasize, you're not alone. I think that is so important when you're experiencing anything in life. It's when you find out that you look around, other folks having the same issue. I remember when I was in school, I would come back to, you come back to class and you couldn't figure out a problem. And you just think, you know, maybe I just didn't get it. And then you get to class and you start talking to everybody. And like, I couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden, everybody in your class basically couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden you realize, oh, it wasn't just me. Everybody had the same issue with that problem. And so that's the way it basically is in this organization. You begin to see other folks had the same problem we had. And that is, a lot of the stuff that they was telling us just didn't make no sense.
Well, you know what, though, JT, think about this. We were talking to John Dellen, and we did his interview a couple of days ago. We put it out, and he talked about how the problem that they had with Jehovah's Witnesses is they told us not to have kids.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we're losing so many members, because we don't have anybody to replace the ones we're losing with. So do you think that there's going to come a time when things are going to dry up with the people in the, you know, the people, the membership? You think membership's going to dry up?
Well, they are trying very hard right now to program the youth that are there now to stay with this. And it seems like there's even more of a push nowadays for them to get baptized earlier than when we were in the organization.
Yeah.
So they're running scared. Most definitely.
Yeah. And we can see that, you know, the numbers, they literally speak for themselves. When I was growing up as a kid, the number one thing was to split congregations. split congregation, because splitting a congregation represented growth. Now we see the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
They're combining congregations. And so whenever any organization is reducing its footprint, that's not a good sign. When we saw Starbucks opening up a Starbucks on every single corner, everybody knew this company was growing and growing. Now, of course, now, you know, Starbucks is starting to close on their store. Same thing with Subway. Subway's everywhere. Now Subways are closing. And so most people understand how it works. The more stores you see opening up, their business is doing good. When they start closing down, business is not doing good. And that's the way it is with the organization. I mean, they're shutting Kingdom Hall down, man. You look at some of these videos. We see people will shoot videos in the Kingdom Hall on like a weeknight when they're having, you know, their little service meeting, basically. Nobody's at the Kingdom Hall. I mean, just empty chairs, all that. We know congregations right now where they rope off the back and just tell everybody, move to the front. And so now with COVID and they're totally out of the hall, it's going to be very interesting to see if they open up Kingdom Halls, but more importantly, when they open Kingdom Halls, to see just what the attendance is going to be, man. It's going to be off the chain. It's going to be off the chain. Because, man, even on my job, man, we got people on my job like, I don't want to come back to work. I want to work from home. I can't imagine what it must be like for a Jehovah's Witness, man. I do not want to work in the Kingdom Hall.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I think there's a lot of talk about how they may be considering the sale of a lot of these properties.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
Programs even mentioned that whole Zoom thing is a trial run right now for not having a physical place to go to. That would be to their demise.
I think back and you know, because you've been around as long as I have, how we used to dog televangelists, man. We used to dog them, man. And now it looks from all outward appearance, man, it looks like the organization is simply moving into the direction of literally becoming just an online televangelist organization. I mean, that's, you know, it's obvious.
Look at the characters they're putting up there. Stephen Lett. I mean, like, you know, this, I mean, most people, how can you take them serious?
Don't be so cold, man. Let me be so cold. it's very difficult. I mean, the representatives that they have now, man, in the organization, they're almost like a joke. I mean, they're comical. I mean, at least back in the day, man, when these guys stepped onto a stage, folks didn't start off laughing. I mean, you know, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
I told JT that I remember, see, when we were coming along, there were 18 governing body members, and they were very sharp brothers. And even one of the meanest brothers that JT talked about at Bethel, one of the governing body, I talked to JT and I said, oh my God, I was at an assembly. And I said, he really tore that talk down. He got down with that talk. He was really good. And they were so professional looking, you know, they could speak very well and everything like that. And I said, if this cast of characters were the governing body during the time that we were coming along, we would have probably left 10 years previous. Because I cannot understand how anyone could sit on a JW Broadcasting and listen to that.
Yeah.
Because I would have been that little kid that'd be like, Mama, he looked goofy. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I would have been like, they could put him on one of these little sitcoms on TV.
Some of the folks that were out in the field, like district overseers, like JC Howard,
yep.
Ellingsworth, they would have looked at these people like what?
Yes, they would have. They, you're absolutely right. They would have been like, you got to be kidding me.
I think they ran out of personnel at Bethel. I don't think they. I think they really got slim pickings up here.
Yeah, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel now, man. I mean, they really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm just being honest, man. I mean, let me give you a perfect example. This, we used to discuss this. You know, they have this thing where they want brothers to evaluate brothers' qualifications to be speakers at the summer convention. They've always had that program. You think this brother's qualified to speak, even on the local level? You know when congregations want to put together speakers, and I sit there and laugh a lot of the time because many of the people who will be evaluating whether someone is a good speaker and can hold people's attention, they're the very ones who don't need to be given talks themselves many times. And so it's like, you've got to be kidding me. And so it's one of those type of things where they're on television, as it were. And basically everybody knows that people who are on television, people who are in the public eye, you've got to be able to hold people's attention. And when you look at some of the caliber of some of the speakers that you're using now, it's like this is not going to hold people's attention. So it's going to be interesting as people continue to try to pay attention when you have these types of characters giving this talks all the time. I mean, it is just fascinating to see what is going to happen down the road. But you know,
trying to look at some of these comments, JT, because you keep trying to push us along. But I'm trying to figure out there's something that says new comment. I wanted to just send a shout out to everyone. I think our friend Ephraim, he said he's going to have to watch this one later. And I wanted to say that I realized that we actually put this on during the football game here in the United States. So some people couldn't watch it because of that. So anyway, Jay, what kind of advice would you give to people who are experiencing shunning?
As I mentioned, definitely counseling, get professional counseling. The other thing is to programs. You, Lady C and JT, you've been a tremendous, even 20 years after my leaving, still being impacted by being shunning. You have been a great aid to me. I recommend, I hope you don't mind me, Lloyd Evans.
Oh yeah, this is very important. I think it's very important to explain to people. We need every voice that we can get. Now, this is not a competition. We are having people whose lives have been jacked up. All of our lives were messed up because what was normal, we lived an abnormal life. So you know, we tell people all the time, we need every voice. And if you have an iPhone, you need to tell your story. Even if you only just share just what happened to you, you may not keep a channel going on and on, but get out there and say what happened to you. We need to document this so that people can see, look, why are all these people talking about this religion like this? And they don't know each other. They've never met each other. Why? Because we all fed from the same trough. Watchtower fed all. See, the Watchtower is very proud to say, we're unified all around the world. Okay. Well, now you're seeing what this unity is getting you, people who are experiencing the same issues. So we invite everybody. I tell people, tell your story. Get your nerves up and come out here and tell your story. You got a story. Especially if you were raised a witness, oh my goodness, nobody has stories like those of us who were raised as witnesses because we didn't have a choice. At least an adult, 22, 24 years old, decide to become a witness. That's a personal choice. But for us as kids, we was just dragged on field service to the meetings, slapped upside the head, beaten the back of the Kingdom Hall. I mean, my goodness. So we have stories to tell. Let people see what your story is. Because I'm going to tell you, today we live in a world, we live in the Google, and we live in the Yelp world, where people want to know the pros and the cons. Organization can say all they want to, don't read things negative about us. People know that doesn't matter. I'm never going to let someone who's selling me a product or a service or an idea tell me, now don't read anything negative about me. That's crazy. And people understand that. That is absolutely ludicrous.
And I would like to just double click on this shunning issue to just tell people that, you know, you're not alone if you're being shunned. You know, if someone is getting disfellowshipped, it's not the end of the world. You have a support group of people that's online, Critical Thinkers, you know, xjwcriticalthinker.com is our website. And if you want to send an email to us, we're taking emails at jtladyc@gmail.com. And that way people can, you know, we're going to try to find a way to bring people together as well. So when I meet people, I put people together. I can't tell you how many people I've put together that are best friends now because they met through our channel. So I'm just saying it's not the end of the world because you're being shunned and, you know, there are brighter days ahead.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of the parting things I wanted to say.
Well, Jay, take care of yourself. We'll be in touch.
Yep.
And we'd like to thank everybody who was able to tune in. And this once again has been JT.
This has been Lady C. thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you all for your support and your donations and things like that. And we look forward to seeing you on our next broadcast. And we are amateurs at this right now, but we plan on taking it and kicking it up a notch and making it even better. So, and we're going to also get it right for the timing so that it's not being held when the football game is on. Okay.
Y'all guys, anyway, take care. Everyone have a great day.
Guys.
Take care of yourselves.
Thanks a lot, Jay.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Sister Martine, hang in there.
All right.
All righty.
Hang in there.
See you later. Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.